Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. I'm your host, Rick Campos. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen loaded with top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. Perch has been my go-to showroom for design projects for years. Their knowledgeable staff is an extension of my design business, providing me with continued education, making me a better resource to my clients. Visit a showroom today and be sure to ask a service representative about Perch Black, their premier trade partner program, exclusively for design professionals. Mention this Design Biz Survival Guide podcast episode within the next 90 days and jumpstart your membership with 100,000 bonus points and 35,000 additional points for each successfully completed project. Visit perch.com for more details. Now on with the show. Today, we welcome Mark Weaver, founder of Mark Weaver & Associates, a full-service design firm headquartered in Los Angeles, California. With over 40 years of design biz experience, Mark is no stranger to the ever-changing design industry, and in this episode, he shares his perspective on the client experience, team culture, design education, and design inspiration. We also discuss the state of luxury design and the client expectations associated with this unique market. Let's get started. Mark, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rick, and thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. It's a beautiful day in Los Angeles.
Yes.
We're here at the beautiful Thomas Lavin showroom at the Pacific Design Center. What a wonderful place for an interview.
Great.
So let's talk the business of design. I'd like to start by hearing a little bit about your business structure, how big is your team, and kind of what your specialty is.
Well, I've been in business for over 40 years here in Los Angeles, and there are six of us on our design team. And I guess people are always asking us, what are we known for? What sets us apart from other firms? And I always like to think that we're known for the quality of work, the exceptional quality of work that we do, and we're known for attention to detail. Mm-hmm. And our clientele is I'd say somewhere around 80% repeat clients. Mm-hmm. So we have clients that have been with us, my first two clients since I started business. And we tend to spoil our clients, give them a lot of attention, and besides an exceptional product and an end result, we try and build a relationship and a friendship with a client, and therefore the client comes back to us several times for future projects.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm a strong believer in a client for life, especially mm-hmm. in this industry.
Yes.
You take good care of them one time and...
Yes. They're very loyal.
They're very loyal.
Yes.
That's great. And you're based here in Los Angeles,
yes,
correct?
Yes, we're in Los Angeles, very close here to the Pacific Design Center.
But you do work all over the country.
Yes, we do work all over the country and all over the world.
Excellent.
Yes.
Is it primarily contemporary, traditional, or kind of across the board?
Well, a little bit across the board. We have projects that range from very contemporary to period homes to historic restorations. We've worked on homes, offices, corporate offices, ships, private aircraft, private mm-hmm. islands. So we do a broad spectrum of work. It just depends on the particular project. And the location and architecture sort of dictates a direction that we focus on for that individual project.
Right, right. So you had mentioned ships, and yes. I had a look at your portfolio, which was yes. amazing, uh-huh. by the way.
Thank you.
And I may be jumping ahead, but I don't want to forget to ask you a little bit about that project. So obviously you do residential all over the country mm-hmm. And a little bit of commercial, it sounds like. But that crossover into, into the ocean liner project, mm-hmm. for example, can you tell us a little bit about that and how that came to be? Because I don't think I've ever met anyone that has done that.
Oh, it was very interesting. I had a client that purchased a residence on the ship called The World. Mm-hmm. And The World is a private residential ship, and it travels around the world all year long, stops at different ports. And you buy a residence, like just like a condo, you buy your residence on the ship, and they can range anywhere from 1,200 to 3,600 square feet. And you can live on the ship full time, or you can be on it 1 week a year if you choose. Right. So you own it, you pay for it, and it's yours. So I had a client, and the initial residence that we did was about 1,400 square feet, and we ended up doing two more residences on the ship for them. And in total, we've done, I think, five or six residences on the ship for different clients.
They're spectacular.
They're thank you.
Like mini condos.
Right. Yes.
They're so beautiful. Yeah. So for the listeners, go straight to the website. Go to his portfolio. You've got to see them. They're amazing.
Well, thank you.
I bet if someone would have told you, I don't know, a couple of decades ago that you would be doing that, would you have believed it? I mean,
the level of
design that you're working at now, you know, the luxury market, which we'll talk about in a minute, is so exciting, and it's so filled with opportunity.
Yeah. No, it's very exciting, and it's a lot of fun to do. Logistically, it's a little difficult because you're working with a ship that's traveling around the world while you're having construction done and design. But it's very much like doing a residence in that everything is shipped to a particular port, whether it's in Spain or Hong Kong. And when the ship arrives, mm-hmm. you arrive there at that time to install it.
Right.
So in the meantime, over a period of months, you're working with contractors to get the work completed so that when it comes for installation time, everything is finished.
Right. I'm so intrigued by this concept, so bear with me. So is there construction occurring while the ship is on the ocean, or does it happen in increments while it's in port?
No, both. It happens when we hire a contractor for this. The contractor may be based out of Geneva, might be based out of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working on the ship while it's traveling, because one of the projects we did was under construction for, I think, 7 months.
Uh-huh.
So there is a crew that we hire, and they're living on the ship for 6 months.
Wow.
And while the work is being completed, and we're in constant contact with them, and occasionally we will fly to a particular port to inspect the work and check all the details. And then when the project's completed and we feel that the work is up to par, then the crew leaves and departs.
That is so interesting. Mm-hmm. We could talk about this for another hour, but I'll move on.
Okay.
I'm so intrigued, though. But so what motivated you to pursue design as a career? Everybody has a story. Some people knew when they were very, very young. Some people learned very late in life. When did you know that this was your passion, that this is something that you were going to pursue?
I think I realized it when I got into the profession, because as a young person, I never really knew what I wanted to do. I never had anything that had inspired me terribly, but I did find architecture a passion. I loved looking at architecture, and I thought I'd study architecture, and somehow I ended up going to design school by talking to a friend of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded very fascinating. And after my first year in design school, I got a job with the top designer in Los Angeles at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very exciting for me, because it opened up a whole new world that I really didn't know existed and gave me a focus and direction. So shortly after that, I started my own business.
So when you started working with that designer in Los Angeles, was it more high-end luxury market, would you describe it as?
Right. We were dealing with the top jobs in California, right. New York, wherever the project was located. And it was interesting, because I was also a draftsman.
Mm-hmm.
For the company. I was also the delivery boy, because we also had an antique showroom, so I took care of the antiques. And the thing that I think that opened up an entirely new world for me, because when I started in design, I was only interested really in contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the 60s. So I was interested in modern contemporary design, and I had little exposure and little knowledge of antiques. Now, that has become a passion of mine. And I travel around the world for clients finding the exceptional and the extraordinary. But by working in the antique showroom and polishing them and learning about them and learning what period things were, I began to appreciate the quality and the sense of character that these pieces have and learn about the provenance and the history. And so it took on an entirely different meaning. So today I love doing a very clean, modern space mm-hmm. and using antiquities or antiques in the space as just like you do a piece of art. It becomes a piece of living sculpture, but it has history and it has character. And it's not for everybody, but for people that understand it and appreciate it, it's quite wonderful.
Right. And what an incredible learning opportunity for you, because you really kind of only know as much as you're exposed to. And so a similar thing happened to me when I kind of entered the world of interior design. I was very, very fortunate in that I just happened to, you know, land a job while I was still in design school working mm-hmm. for one of the top interior designers in Orange County, which exposed me to a level of design that just absolutely blew my mind and that I think would be a dream come true for so many design students at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was such good exposure, and it taught me that design was very different than what I kind of envisioned in mm-hmm. my head. And then I launched my own business, but for the last 6 years, re-engaged with the luxury market. And it's just such a privilege to be exposed to this level of projects and all of these different styles of design and everything that goes into it. So, you know, really kind of being a part of design is so important in the growth.
Right. One of the exciting things about this profession is that the work is not static, and it's not, in our case, it's not repetitious. Mm-hmm. Every project is unique. It's different. Every client is unique. Their requirements, their lifestyles are different. The locations of the home dictate a certain direction, a certain type of look. And the architecture gives you a direction. So everything is always changing. We always have a fresh project, something new, something challenging. Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps us creative and going, because everything, we try not to repeat things for clients. And we have a very tight-knit group of clients, and so I don't want one client to go in another's home and see the same thing. It has to be unique, and it has to be special. That's why they're using us.
Right, right, absolutely.
So that makes it very exciting to always be one step ahead. And what I try and do is educate our clients. I educate them about antiques. I educate them about art if they're not familiar. And I expose mm-hmm. them to a lot of things that they wouldn't be perhaps knowledgeable of. And a lot of these things aren't going to apply, but I want them to know the entire spectrum of things that are available to them before we narrow it down.
Right. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because there is so much responsibility when it comes to the interior design profession. And the more I talk to designers, the more I am hearing that same type of approach, where it's not about just showing up and making it amazing mm-hmm. and having the clients move in and go on with their life, but it really is about that journey with the client mm-hmm. and informing them and educating them. Informing them about the process of design, mm-hmm. educating them on things like art and antiquities, which is such a huge, it's obviously a joy for you, mm-hmm. and what a privilege for the client to learn something new and exciting in the process.
Yes.
Yeah.
It also, the thing that's important also is that you're building a relationship with a client, and you're building trust. And when the client realizes that you're knowledgeable in more than one or two areas, it gives them confidence. It reassures them that you're the right person, that you know what you're doing.
Right.
So it's also a good sales tool.
Mm-hmm. 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 I agree. We were just talking about travel before mm-hmm. we started
yes.
recording. And that is another great example, I think, of how, you know, clients, especially at this level, appreciate and value the fact that you travel and that you're exposed to different architecture and things that will contribute to your design aesthetic.
Travel is probably, I would say, the number one thing that a designer can do, because traveling the world, seeing different cultures, lifestyles, cuisines, fashion, just everything, it just explodes your mind. I mean, it shows you and educates you. It shows you what is possible. And your imagination can take you anywhere. So in traveling, I'm always looking for unique things. And it's not just related to design. I look at, I just returned from Italy. And I remember sitting down to dinner one evening, and they brought a salad that was actually a work of art. Yeah. The way the ingredients were placed on the plate, it was like an extraordinary painting.
Right.
And then I looked at the plate and how the room was furnished and all of that. So the exposure to all of that will put an indelible image in your mind. And then when it comes time for you to create something for a client, you can use your data bank for your resources.
Yes.
And remember something so extraordinary, and you want to give that experience to your clients.
Right.
So that's what travel does, and it opens you up to this entire world of possibilities. It's very exciting.
I agree. Totally agree. And I kind of began to value travel a little late in mm-hmm. life because I didn't see it that way mm-hmm. at the time. And now I know it's kind of my only way to really detach and actually observe and take in those things like you mm-hmm. just described. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, in our everyday hustle and bustle, it's kind of hard. You know, a salad at lunchtime is a 15-minute ordeal, and you don't really have time to appreciate it.
Right.
It's just, you know, another act in your day. But by traveling and detaching, it puts me in a place where I can actually observe. And I can actually absorb information uh-huh. and, you know, kind of build that visual data bank that you were describing for recall. So I agree. I talk to designers all the time, and everyone kind of says the same thing.
Yeah.
The more you can travel, the better off you'll be, the more inspired you'll become, and just the more information you'll be able to share.
Well, and you find an enormous amount of resources for your trade.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was traveling, I found a foundry outside of Pompeii that's going to do some castings for me from pieces that are in the Naples Archaeological Museum, historical pieces. I was working on fabrics in Rome for a client, and the fabrics are only available at this particular showroom. They're exceptional and extraordinary. So they're working on that. So it's very exciting to have resources that you can bring to your client, and they feel they're getting something unique, and I also have them participate in it
mm-hmm.
and get them involved. And then they get very excited about the project that we're doing and realize that we're not just filling it full of furniture, that it's filled with emotion, special things, and a lot of character.
Right. How incredible. How incredible. Earlier you touched on design school, and it was a question that I usually ask. And so it sounds like you did go to design school.
Yes.
I'd like to get your... hear your perspective on the value of a formal education in interior design now. How important do you think that is now as opposed to maybe 10 or 15 years ago? Because I know things have changed so dramatically in the design industry.
Well, I think it's absolutely critical. When I started in design, the design industry was in its infancy. There were very few people who were individual designers. Today, the design industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, but it's also entertainment on television. It's a huge shelter industry for magazines. It touches every, I don't think a person can go through their daily life without having design affect them. So having a formal education is critical, because when we look at people today to hire, young designers or assistants, they're actually better equipped than I am, because their knowledge of handicap codes and everything that's required today, they have backgrounds in CAD. I don't know how to do CAD. We have draftspeople that do that, but they learn CAD. They learn how to operate. They know how to operate the computer and navigate systems that run our business.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to work with architects. So they're very, very well equipped as a result of their education.
Yes.
And the education today covers a broad spectrum of the industry. It might, whether you're going into the hospitality mm-hmm. or commercial end of the business or the residential end of the business. So it's imperative that young people that are interested have an education, because it's important for them to know how to draft, how to use CAD, and everything that comes along with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's such a wonderful time in the design industry. It's such a great time to be a part of this design industry and the design community, because even when I, kind of became really interested in design and decided to pursue it, you know, as a career path, I still felt like it was a shot in the dark. Like, can this really be a career? And just in the last 10 years, it's changed so much. Mm-hmm. And people that are graduating from design school and that are entering the field, I see this sense of promise for them.
Yeah.
They're not asking themselves if there's a real possibility. They know that it's a real possibility, right, that a design career is a reality for them, right, now. And that's such a great thing.
Well, what I tell young people, besides the education, probably the most important thing for them to do is, while they're in school, is to get a job with it some aspect of the design business, whether it's working in a fabric or furniture showroom, mm-hmm, working with a designer, an architect, and it can be the simplest little job. Just get your foot in the door, because what you learn in real life is so beneficial. You can't replace real life experience with anything.
Right.
And that's actually how I learned. Mm-hmm. So I just jumped in, and I was, I didn't know much, but I was a very quick learner. So,
Mark, what is your definition of luxury design? Do you feel that term is being overused? Like, has it lost its meaning?
Well, I think to some effect, yes, it has. I think everything today, everybody's looking for luxury in some aspect. But for me, I guess if I were going to define that, I would say it's uniqueness, because everything today is branded. Everything today has a signature. So I tend to stay away from things that are signatured and copied, because it's repetitious. Mm-hmm. And I try to give my clients something unique or special. So I look for the rare, the unusual. And in our design process, we design a lot of the individual pieces that we do. Mm-hmm. We might design fabrics. We might be designing furniture, chairs, a commode, a particular table, so that not every piece is like this, but we give the client something unique and special. Mm-hmm. So to me, that defines luxury, because anybody can go out and buy a name piece, and it's just, and you know, many other people have the same thing. So
right.
I think everybody today that in the very high end luxury end is looking for something unique.
I agree. It's less about the price tag and more about
the rarity,
and the bespoke quality.
Yes,
absolutely. I think that's what really sets luxury designers apart, is your ability to deliver that and your willingness to explore resources, mm-hmm, to bring that type, mm-hmm, of that level of design to the table, mm-hmm, for sure. What is your relationship with social media? So you mentioned that you've been doing this a good long time, and you know, you've got people that do the CAD and that sort of thing. And I know that so many design professionals, myself included, who have been doing this for a while, if you came in just beyond that cusp of technology and influence, especially when it comes to social media, it can be kind of a slippery slope. What's your relationship with social media, and how does it work for your business?
Well, I'd have to say in the last 3 years, I have a different perspective on social media. I've always shied away from it, never found it. I'm a very private person, and we don't publish a lot of our work because our clients want privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize how important it is to furthering the reputation and of our company. So I think today, social media, it's imperative. You must be involved in social media. It's the way to get your name around, for people to be familiar with what you do. And I just had this discussion with our PR people. And today, it seems that the direction of social media is all gearing towards what we're doing today, podcasts and videos.
Mm-hmm.
People love to see videos. Our new website, we've included a video on it of myself and my associate, Daryl Wilson. And it was kind of fun to do, actually, when we got it done. So I look at social media today differently. I think it's a part of business and life today that we have to address. And you have to be involved in it, or you'll just be left in the dust.
Right.
Now, younger people, it's second nature to them.
Right.
It's something I had to learn, and I was probably fighting and screaming all the way. But, you know, now I'm enjoying it.
I'm not going to lie. It's complicated, and it took me a while to catch on as well. And the last firm that I worked at, it's interesting what you just said about not publishing much of your work out of respect to your client's privacy. We had the same kind of business format and the same understanding with our clientele. And people always asked us, why are there no images on your website? Why are you never published? And we were constantly telling that same story about our client's privacy. And the principal designer did a really amazing job as far as, you know, coming from an ego standpoint and saying, listen, it's just kind of an extension of who I'm about as well. This really isn't as much about me. I'm not here to get a project published in a magazine. While it's nice, what's more important is the happiness of the client, the satisfaction of the client, and the end result. And it sounds like you deal with the same thing. And as creatives, sometimes we probably struggle with setting our ego aside because we want to be published and we want to be noticed. But how does that work for you as far as working on such incredible projects and having to kind of keep them to yourself?
I have no problem with it. It's being a private person myself, I understand why the clients would not want something published. And so I understand. It doesn't bother me. It would be great to share it, and because after you've, many of these projects take anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and you've been, you know, just pouring out your heart for this period of time to do something extraordinary.
Yeah.
And of course you love to share that, but some of these things are not for everybody either.
Right.
Not everybody can appreciate certain things.
So. Right. We used to always tell everyone, this is this client's home, and that's that client's home.
And they're all different.
And it may not be what you're looking for. So let's talk about what we can do for you.
Yes.
And that usually worked for us.
Right.
Can we talk about your team and office culture for a second? Only because I know a lot of designers that listen, they're very proactive when it comes to team building, and it really has become more about the team. There's great value in that. What is your office culture? What is your team culture like? What makes people want to be and remain a part of your team?
Well, hopefully, our environment at our office is, it's a great place to work, I think. We're a great team. We're a great group of people that we work together. I don't think that because the business is mine that I'm the only one with great ideas. I know when I was younger and working with other designers, and I always thought, gee, I have a great idea, but I was afraid to voice my opinion and give my ideas. And I encourage people to do that because everybody has a valuable idea. And when I'm working with a client on a project, I try and get them involved and listen to what they want and start pulling out of them ideas and things and getting them involved. So I think as a team of people, it's very important to have everybody involved. We'll sit down to review a project, and as a group, we all throw in different ideas, and then we distill that and analyze it and come up with what would be best for this particular client, this particular budget, and this particular situation. And then we give the client, you know, maybe 2 or 3 options and say, okay, these are the options here. So I also think as a working environment, I don't want to go into the office every day and feel agitated or angry. I like coming in and saying good morning to everybody, having a pleasant atmosphere in the office, and that starts from the top down. So I don't tolerate a lot of ego in the office. I don't tolerate attitude. Everyone is there to make for one goal, and that's to create something extraordinary for our clients. And in the process of doing that, we try and enjoy the process ourselves.
Right. Sounds like a wonderful place to work.
Well, hopefully it is.
Well, you know, it's been said that we are an average of the 5 people that we surround ourselves with most often. And that, I think, trickles down to the work environment because, let's face it, that's where we spend the majority of our time. Most of us spend more time at the office than we do at home.
Right.
So being a part of a supportive team mm-hmm. and coming to a place that that's positive and filled with good energy and people mm-hmm. that want to be there and no mm-hmm. ego, that's the golden ticket right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hear many people who are not happy in their careers and then when it boils down to it, they're not happy in their current situation. Mm-hmm. They're not, it's not the right fit. They're not in the right place. And I think sometimes it takes a little time to find where your fit in life or in a particular career is.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Life is a trial and error process. And the sooner you embrace that, the better off you'll be.
Yes.
So, Mark, let's dig into the signature questions, starting with the secret to your survival. What would you say is the secret to your survival in this industry?
Gosh, I guess it's perseverance. I never stop working, and I never stop till I get it right. So, and I love a challenge. So when I get a situation from a client that's challenging, I take it head on. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm just not one that gives up. So I keep working, and I've survived several bad economies, and I've learned professionally how to run a business, what to do in a recession, and I think that's very important for people to learn how to run their business, how to pull back in a recession, and how to survive, because typically in this industry, business is up, and you're at the top of it and you're busy, and then it slows down and down. So it's up and down, and you have to be smart enough to know how to survive.
It's such a roller coaster.
Yes, it is.
It is such a roller uh-huh. coaster.
And it's not just our industry. It's today, it's all businesses.
Right.
Yeah. And in order to survive, you have to be smart.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you have to pay attention.
Yes.
Having been in the industry as long as we both have, we have the luxury of saying, hey, when this happened last time, this is what went down.
Right.
Let's refer back to that. Let's learn from that and apply it. Mm-hmm. And disregarding that is just a recipe for disaster.
Yes.
What would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then?
Well, that's a difficult one because life is an extraordinary journey where we're learning every day. My mother lived till she was 96, and till the day she passed, she always said, you know, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't learn something. Mm-hmm. She does a crossword puzzle, she learns a new word. It's just, and I think that's a great attitude. I think we have to always be learning, always exposing ourselves to new things. So, I don't know that, I think it's just the accumulation of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the great thing about maturity is that you've had so many experiences, you've acquired this vast knowledge and the ability to share it with people. So I don't know that it's any one particular thing. It's just an accumulation of knowledge and experience.
Right. Right. So, sometimes you don't
realize.
And that's
what's great about getting older is that's the positive aspect.
That's the positive aspect of getting older.
You may not look as great, but you're smarter, okay?
Lots of knowledge.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we don't realize that we're learning on a mm-hmm. day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Our experiences every day, our challenges, because not every day is rainbows and unicorns. We mm-hmm. know that. I think to remind yourself every day that it's a learning experience, mm-hmm. as you just said, mm-hmm. is really, really important, because then down the line, you have this wealth of information and knowledge mm-hmm. that you've gathered over the years. Yeah. How would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
Well, this is something that's been very satisfying for me. I never thought of myself as an educator, but I have a lot of young people that are students or in the design or thinking of going in the design industry that always want to talk to me about what should they do, how do they go about something, and I'm more than happy to share my knowledge. I have very limited time, but I really enjoy this because as a young person, I never had anybody to go to ask questions. And I was a little too, I think, withdrawn or shy to ask something and expose myself as not smart enough to have already discovered that. So I love helping young people. And one of the most exciting things that I have been doing for the last few years, I lecture at UCLA, and I talk to the design students there. And it's very satisfying to share my knowledge of how to run a business, how to establish a business, the pitfalls of the design industry, what to avoid, what to look forward to, how to be creative, how to go about making a custom piece of furniture, how to work with clients, how to present yourself, just all aspects of the design business, what it takes to be a great designer. And I find the students very, very receptive, and it's very satisfying afterwards to have the students come up to you and say how wonderful it was to hear this and see their enthusiasm, and they want to ask questions. So I guess that's what how I give back, and it's extremely enjoyable.
It's a wonderful way to pay it forward. It's wonderful. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really, really appreciate it. And I think that your story and what you shared with us today is going to inspire so many other designers, which is my intent. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Rick.
Can you tell us how the listeners can learn a little bit more about you, maybe your website and maybe your Instagram?
Sure. Our website is markweaver.com, and on it we have a link to our Instagram on there.
Perfect.
So thank you, and I appreciate that anybody that takes the time to look at it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
I want to extend a very special thank you to Thomas Lavin and his exceptional team for providing such a welcoming environment for Mark and I to have this conversation. Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, team. I truly appreciate your support of the podcast. You know, Mark touched on so many things that I share with fellow design professionals, starting with the client for life concept. I learned very early on in my design career that this business is built on a foundation of trust and service. I believe that every design professional that has been in this business for any significant length of time has repeat clients to thank for that. I especially appreciate Mark's responsibility to the client of being one step ahead of design and always bringing value to the table. You know, this business is not just about what we as design professionals deliver. It's also about how we integrate the client and other resources into the process. Our clients are investing in an experience, and it's our responsibility and opportunity to inform and educate them along the way, to demonstrate to them our ability to create and deliver a truly unique design. Office culture is going to be a reoccurring question as I continue to converse with fellow design professionals. Leadership plays such an important role in a successful design business, and as Mark stated, it starts from the top. We spend more time with our coworkers than we do with our own family, so be sure to make your time in the office positive, generous, and valuable. Mark's message to his team about having one common goal, to create something special for the client, should be a common message in every design office. Leave your ego at the door and contribute, grow, and learn. We are so grateful to our podcast sponsor, Perch. If you're in the LA, Orange County, San Diego, or Palm Springs area, please be sure to drop in and see what's new. The showrooms are constantly evolving to showcase the newest trends in appliances and plumbing fixtures, and their new display of cabinet hardware by top brands is just one more way that Perch can help you bring your design project to life. If this podcast was helpful to you, the very best thing you can do is pay it forward and share it with fellow classmates, design professionals, and anyone else you think may benefit. If you're listening on iTunes, please take a moment to rate the podcast and leave a review. This really helps us become more visible to the design community. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, get out there and inspire.